Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Earlier in the program, we talked about changes to the Obamacare. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan promise. Let's call that round, 458 of the fight over the Affordable Care Act. Well, now we're joined by the co-directors of a new documentary that chronicles round one. Town Hall follows two central Pennsylvania residents who find themselves caught up in the whirlwind that was the summer of 2009 and the rise of the Tea Party. From Obamacare repeal votes to the rise of Ted Cruz to the shutdown theatrics, we are still very much living in the ripple effects of that summer. Jamila Wignott and Sierra Pettengill are joining us now. Welcome to WNYC and congratulations on this documentary, Town Hall.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of people forget that the Tea Party really exploded onto the scene that summer. It was only a few years ago, 2009, during these town hall protests. How did you pick, and we're going to hear some clips of both of them, but tell us about one to start. How did you pick one of your protagonists, Katie Abram of Lebanon, Pennsylvania?
Go ahead, Sierra. we were working together when the those healthcare town halls started happening, and we were sort of stunned by the amount of passion and anger and the how high the emotions were running. So we started collecting all of the clips of kind of the most explosive town hall meetings, and Katie Abram from Lebanon had a really sort of amazing moment, and then she was catapulted onto the national stage after that. So
let's listen to that moment. This is perhaps the central moment of the film, which is Katie's speech at a town hall in her town, Lebanon. She gets up in a crowded room about 2 feet from Senator Arlen Specter and says this.
This is about the systematic dismantling of this country. I'm only 35 years old. I have never been interested in politics. You have awakened the sleeping giant. We are tired of this. This is why everybody in this room is so ticked off. I don't want this country turning into Russia, turning into a socialized country. My question for you is, what are you going to do to restore this country back to what our founders created according to the Constitution?
So she became a star on Fox News and et cetera after that. But, you know, a lot of our listeners probably hear that speech and recognize that she's passionate, but also hear a disconnect between her saying, I've never been interested in politics and I don't want this country turning into Russia, or think that, wait, she thinks our country is turning into Russia so folks can have health care? Just because people can have health care. So what's your understanding? Where did Katie get that initial spark? And where did she get the language that we heard in that clip?
Right. I think health care is sort of the veneer over it's the issue that the Tea Party has chosen as a symptom of our decline. So I think her passion is actually more, and the emotion behind it is more representative of the Tea Party than necessarily the specifics of the healthcare law and its threat.
Yeah, I think also, you know, she and many of the others in the Tea Party do listen to a lot of conservative talk radio and conservative media, and I think that kind of refrain was something that she had picked up on. But what it really is representational of, I think, is a kind of enormous fear in the wake of a financial collapse, kind of general uncertainty. In Pennsylvania, we see a lot of the same sort of trends that are happening nationally. There's demographic shifts that are changing and, you know, dramatically altering the landscape of the towns that these folks have lived in. There's this president who sort of is the highest symbol of the kind of change that America's, you know, embarking upon. And then there's this massive government rollout that's happening on the heels of this financial collapse that I think for conservatives economically doesn't make sense to them. So it is, you know, they're in their worldview, like a steady march towards Russia.
So for Katie Abram, since you followed these two individuals, for her, were there specific issues that you could find or concerns in her own life that animated her politics? Because from what we can tell watching the film, she's not personally threatened by many of these questions. She lives in a sizable house. She has a stable income, apparently, two cars, and she's getting all lit up over this fundamental threat to her country as she sees it. So are there conditions in her life that animate this passion, as far as you could tell, or does it come from some, you know, more abstract notion that she gets from talk radio or wherever?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to note about the kind of lifestyle she lives is she lives in a very rural community in central Pennsylvania. So for New Yorkers, her house looks enormous, and probably we all assume it costs billions of dollars. But it's, you know, it's a modestly priced home, although her lifestyle is very secure. And I think that is a kind of interesting paranoia of the American middle class. There's just always this fear that at any minute, sort of everything that provides you the stability in your life can be taken from you. And so while I think that, you know, you can look at Katie's life and see that she doesn't really seem to have much to fear, she is very, very preoccupied by the possibility of ending up in the bottom. And I think part of that preoccupation is about her sense that she doesn't want to take government handouts. She doesn't believe in a social safety net. So when her family finds itself in those kind of barest of straits, they will have to do for themselves. And that's a very kind of terrifying prospect for her.
So listeners, we can take calls as we listen to clips from this new documentary, Town Hall, which will be shown, by the way. Why don't we throw that in? This is part of the Doc NYC Festival, right? So where can people see this film?
I think our screening on Sunday is sold out, but I think there should be rush tickets available. But that's at IFC Center, and then Wednesday the 20th at 5 p.m. also at IFC Center.
And we have links to information about the film and the festival on our site. You can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, people, if you want to call in, if you identify with the Tea Party yourself and want to talk about how you would answer some of the questions that I've been asking or how you relate to Katie and the other guy, John, profiled in the film, who we'll play a clip of in a minute, we'd love to hear from you. Talk about root causes. Talk about, you know, where this passion comes from for you in your life, or is it just something you see as kind of an intellectual construct of threat to the United States? Or anybody else with questions for our guests, the filmmakers Jamila Wignott and Sierra Pettengill, who have made this documentary. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. And just before we go to a clip of your other subject, John, on Katie and her saying that she's not political and hadn't been in the past, I guess this is one of the fundamental questions around the Tea Party, is how spontaneous it really was and how orchestrated as a top-down Republican assault on President Obama. Because a year later, after that, you know, thrilling moment in the film, we find Katie working the phones for Americans for Prosperity, the Koch-funded, Koch Brothers-funded, not Coca-Cola, Koch Brothers-funded political action group. So did you come up with any new clues as to how grassroots an explosion this really was at town hall meetings in the summer of 2009?
I think they started. I think the feelings were there, and then I think it was very quickly harnessed by more powerful interests. And it was really, you know, we didn't know what Katie's path was going to be, obviously, when we started filming with her, but she does track on to that. She is phone banking for Americans for Prosperity, and then she gets a full-time or part-time job as a director of policy for Pennsylvania for Americans for Prosperity. So she goes from that grassroots moment at the town hall meeting mm-hmm. to right into the fold.
Because she's inspired to do so.
Right.
And the other person you profile is John, a businessman and lifelong Republican living in Reading, Pennsylvania, one of these post-industrial cities that's in many ways dying on the vine. And he seems to see the Tea Party as the best place to direct some of his longstanding beliefs and concerns. So very different story from Katie. And let's take a listen to a bit of John, this from a scene when you're driving around town with him in Reading.
This was a great industrial town, and the progressive governments here have done their level best to destroy the city by chasing out anybody that makes any money. Now, this was one of the upper class section of Berks County, the middle class section of Reading, rather. So this now is almost all Hispanic. And they opened the floodgates mid-80s. According to the new census, it's 58% Hispanic. most of whom are illegals. When the Europeans came over, they came over at a rate at which they could be Americanized. These were Eastern and Southern Europeans that were here. And they prided themselves on how well they kept their homes. Now, not so much. No, not so much. Because people came from regions that they don't know when they move into a place that they need to keep it fixed up. I mean, there would have been a time, see that porch there? There would have been a time that that would never have happened. You see?
John from Reading in the documentary Town Hall. We have the filmmakers. And so as filmmakers, sitting in the passenger seat in a way at that moment, what are you thinking? Do you want to put down the camera and say you're being racist, or are you sympathizing with someone who's genuinely scared about the town he grew up in? What's your mindset?
I think in that moment, you know, we always knew that John was an incredibly sort of candid guy, very unguarded. So for us as filmmakers, that was very important that we had somebody who was going to be as open with his feelings and sort of unguarded in speaking with us. We were definitely surprised that he would be that frank about his kind of sense of the evolution of his town. But we also felt, you know, what we entered this process with the understanding that we were not there to kind of interrogate them and enter into a debate between filmmaker and subject. We really wanted them to continue to express their worldview. And for somebody like John, you know, it's, I don't agree with the conclusions he arrives at, but he is somebody who grew up in an America that was strikingly different and in a town that was strikingly different than the one that he finds himself in today. And that's, I mean, just from a human point of view, a very kind of strange shift to see in one's lifetime.
And it's worth pointing out that this film is unnarrated, very deliberately paced. It's really you being a witness to these two people's stories with lots of access to the two. So before we take some calls, do you want people to see your film as an exercise in multicultural understanding and root causes, or just to say, look how ignorant and racist these people are, and that's an end in itself?
Definitely not the latter. yeah, we, you know, it felt a little anthropological to us. You know, I've said a few times that actually the act of spending 2.5 years in a space with people I strongly disagree with and just having to listen and not feel compelled or sort of that there's even a possibility of argument is a really was a transformative thing to do, and I don't think there's enough of that happening. And to, you know, over that time period, we obviously grew quite close to our subjects while still disagreeing with them, and that that feels like an important thing to have done.
Do you feel like you got some insights into a part of America that you might otherwise have just dismissed? Jamila?
Yeah, I think certainly with Katie, I could identify with her sort of economic, I don't want to call it paranoia, but just sort of this preoccupation, I say, about this fear of slipping and what it means in a country to be a part of a middle class where you sort of feel like you'll be the unsupported group. The very wealthy don't have to worry about these concerns, and we do have a social safety net for, you know, poorer folks, and it's these sort of middle class individuals who feel sort of terribly threatened by that. So I could understand that. And with John, it was, you know, I'm a black person, and it was interesting to be following around a kind of boomer generation white guy who saw his America disappearing, and to understand that, you know, what I saw as a steady and march towards inclusiveness that I would celebrate, to him represented a kind of tearing down of a world that reflected him, of an America that told him he was the real America. And I think an America that gave him all the reasons to be entitled to feel that way. And so to wake up one morning and have your country say, well, you're not the only kind of American that there is, after a sort of 65-year, you know, life that said otherwise, I could appreciate the sort of tension and pain and sort of displacement around that. He is now feeling terribly marginalized, and that's something I've identified with.
We have a lot of people calling in. Let's hear from some of them. Melanie in Lock Harbor, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Brian. This is particularly interesting to me because I went to one of those meetings where Representative Frank Pallone was trying to present his healthcare, you know, initiatives, and it was in Red Bank, and it was one of the most sickening things. I came out really feeling horrible. The people that were opposed to, you know, the government, I have to say, the Tea Party people, I didn't even know that much about them at the time, even though I am a political person, and I do go out to meetings and things. I've never been to anything quite like that. They didn't let him speak. They interrupted him constantly. They shouted. They heckled. Older people went up with walkers, I mean older people, up to the stage and said things like, keep government out of my health care. We all kind of looked at each other like, but you're on Medicare. Who runs Medicare? And it was like a total disconnect. I just came out feeling horrible.
What do you think they were motivated by?
Well, I don't know. Hatred, it seemed to me. Hatred. There was a man there who had a small daughter in a wheelchair. The girl was old enough to read, and it was a ventilator kind of wheelchair. And above her head, he had a sign that said, Obamacare may kill my daughter. Mm. I mean, how do you do these kind of things?
Mm-hmm.
I just came out, and I really felt chilled and sickened. I really did. It just was horrible. And I sat next to a man who I thought seemed fairly rational until he told me that the beginning of the end was when they made the handicapped cutouts on the corners here in New Jersey so that people could access them. That was the beginning of the government takeover.
Melanie, thank you for your call. Another perspective, I think, from Dar in Manhattan. Dar, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I am a centrist. I'd say left-leaning centrist who really doesn't have much in common with the Tea Party movement, especially with the religious aspects of it. But I actually believe that the role they're playing is a very important one of reminding the government, which I'm also disappointed with, in terms of the fact that if you're going to take money in taxes, you actually have to spend it well. The amount of waste that goes on in our government and the fact that neither the left or centrist Republicans will ever do anything to address the amount of waste, for example, in Medicare and Medicaid that is well documented because of their attachment to the dollars that come into the system.
And to that,
is something that does need to be addressed.
To that extent, you say, go Tea Party, drill the government until you can get to some of this waste.
No. I don't say go Tea Party, but I also, when I look at it and try to think to myself, who am I more supportive of? The far left, who seems to think that there is no limit on how much spending we can do, even if it's completely wasteful or not holding politicians feet to the fire to spend the money in a way that's productive versus the far right. I understand their concerns more.
Dar, thank you very much. And in the film, thinking back to the last caller and the vitriol that she was describing at the Congressman Pallone town meeting, in the film we see scenes where Katie, the Tea Party member you're profiling, rails against the vitriol and disrespect that she sees from the left. So it's a sign that both sides can play the victim very readily.
Yeah. Yeah, and that that sort of vitriol that the first caller described in the meeting is the same thing that led us to want to make this film, was what is happening here. This is not about – it's not about Medicare and it's not about
– government efficiency.
Government efficiency, yeah. There's something deep that is happening.
Kristen in North Bergen, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kristen.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, good. My primary concern is the reference the filmmakers continue to make to middle-class Americans, the fact that we feel threatened, and that is driving us towards the Tea Party. And I don't really think that they mean that exactly, but I keep hearing it that way. And I am a middle-class American. I'm lower middle income. I do feel threatened and struggling to survive. There's just no way around that reality in my life. but I'm not a member of the Tea Party, nor do I have any leanings in that direction. So maybe they could just clarify that. I'd appreciate it.
This is Jamila, and I should clarify I'm the one sort of beating that drum more. I think it's in part because I see that same anxiety in my parents, who are by no means ever going to join the Tea Party. They're kind of ex-hippies. But I just mean that for Katie as a conservative woman in the middle class, that her concern, her fears are motivated by this idea that someday she may lose ground. And so for her, I think that's a draw towards the Tea Party. There's a scene in the film where you see that she's actually using much of the money that she earns as an Americans for Prosperity worker to buy food for a food store. She has a basement where she actually is storing food in preparation for a time when her family may not be able to afford, you know, groceries, or, you know, just this time where something may happen. And so it's more my sense of my sympathy for her in finding the Tea Party as a kind of space in which she can speak to those fears, find other people who kind of answer back and say, yeah, we're afraid of the same thing. And that, so that's part of what I think is drawing her into that space.
Kristen, thank you. Did either of these people have health insurance problems? Since you only profiled two people in the film.
So John, and this wasn't sort of apparent at the very beginning of our shooting, but John is taking care of his elderly mother, whose health care he's really struggling to pay for. And in the film, he's trying sort of desperately to figure out any way to afford that without having to put her on Medicaid. And I mean, I don't want to give away the film, but
I'm just curious, somebody who actually finds themselves uninsured or badly covered or struggling with an insurance company, does it become harder for them to identify with the right that thinks the market is going to take care of everything in that realm?
Right. I mean, I will say that I don't think, and, you know, we don't want to speak in huge broad swaths because, of course, we weren't talking to every Tea Party person in America. But I do feel like we weren't finding people who were kind of at those margins in the Tea Party. Again, I think it was more a kind of psychological state and an emotional state than it was where you would find that, you know, a Tea Party person actually was kind of struggling to afford their health care. And that's why they saw sort of Obama's, you know, plan as an overreach, if that answers your question.
Let's get one more call in here. And here is Steve calling from JFK Airport. He says he does identify with the Tea Party. Steve, I really appreciate your call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I listen to you guys a lot. Now, there's a few things that really infuriate me, the fact that people on the left have to demonize everyone who's on the right. What is wrong with going back to the rule book of how the country was founded and how government is supposed to be our servant and not our master? Look at what Bloomberg has done. Oh, you can't eat this, you can't eat that, we want to outlaw this, we want to ban this. Hey, if a person wants to poison himself, why not? Now, another thing, I don't like being told what to do, and that comes from my Army training. Why am I not allowed to make my own decisions? Why can't we smoke outside? Can I imagine smoking outside, and it's progressive. One step at a time to restriction. And yes, I identify with the woman in the film saying that we're going to be like the Soviet Union. It's true. How much more overreach are we going to have by our police forces, by the politicians handcuffing our police in New York City?
It sounds like you have more problems.
4,000 murders a year.
It sounds like you have more of a problem with
that. Now that we have 10% of that, because the stop and frisk is actually making the criminals afraid to carry their weapons, now we're going to handcuff the cops?
It sounds like you have more of a problem with Mayor Bloomberg and Bill de Blasio than with President Obama.
What about all the black children that are going to die in their apartments and on the streets because of gangland violence?
When they pull back on stop and frisk, you're saying. Okay, Steve, I'm going to leave it there. And we're just about out of time with the filmmakers of Town Hall, which follows two central Pennsylvania residents who find themselves caught up in the whirlwind that was the summer of 2009 when the Tea Party was born. This film is showing at the Doc NYC Festival. You can get information, though Sunday showing at IFC is sold out. You can get information about the film and as one of our guests said, maybe get rush tickets for Sunday's showing. You can find out about the film on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show, and we thank Jamila Wignott and Sierra Pettengill, the filmmakers of Town Hall. What do you do after this? You got another one?
We take a long nap.
You previously made that film about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, right? Factory
yeah.
fire.
Yeah. We were actually finishing that
different.
Film as this one was beginning. So
yeah.
And you're looking around, watching Fox News and MSNBC for your next possible topic.
Right. Exactly.
No shutdown sequel to Town
Hall. No.
All right. Thank you both very much.
Thanks
for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. And coming up next, we actually have another film to talk about with Ricki Lake, the actress and talk show host, on her new documentary, Breast Milk, which shows some of the struggles that moms have breastfeeding, not just the joys, and even talks about breast milk sharing networks that are risky, but that Ricki Lake used herself. So stay with us for that.